So now we are joined by none other than poet Jennifer Rockwell. We're talking about her new book, Vultures. How are we doing this morning, Jennifer?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
No worries. No worries at all. Do you prefer to be called Jenny, Jennifer? Any Jen?
Either one's fine. I kind of go by Jenny or Jennifer usually.
Cool. I'll go Jenny then. So you're in Tamaki right now. What is it looking like up there?
It is beautiful. We got clear skies, sun all around. Perfect day.
Nice. Yeah, it's relatively sunny in Dunedin. It's definitely sunny. It's just not necessarily super warm. That's a good southern combo we like to have. We're talking about your new book, Vultures, which is a collection of poetry written in the Southern Gothic mode. You mentioned in a recent RNZ interview your writing began with novels that you'd share with your family. What was the general vibe of these novels? Were they fantasy? Were they... Yeah, what was the vibe? What was the vibe?
They were fantasy. I was about 10 or like 9, 10, 11 years old, so I was writing a lot of fantasy. I was writing a lot of adventure books. I wrote this like 300-page one that was about the elements, so like water girl, fire girl. It was crazy. It was great. I lost it, unfortunately. The computer died one day, and I can never find them again, which is such a shame because I'd love to read them now. It'd be so funny.
Oh, damn. Yeah.
I know.
It's my brother, when we were growing up, wrote these books called The A Guide to Corthera or something, and it was like a list of fake like creatures that live in this fantasy world. It was so great. there's a poem in this new book of yours called Love is an 80s Horror, which employs imagery of a couple near a pitch black lake holding each other while all sorts of strange events happen around them and they question what might happen to themselves and to each other. What is your favorite 80s horror movie?
So I knew I was going to get this question and I was like, do I lie? The truth is, I can't watch horror. I'm terrible with scary movies. I know, I'm a phony. I'm really, really bad with horror. I get so scared. I can't do it. But with this poem, I think like the inspiration really came from the feeling when you're sort of like in a relationship or a situationship or whatever, and you can kind of, you know that it's going to end bad. Like, and I kind of thought about how that was like in every horror movie, even the ones I've watched. you see the main character and know that they're going to die, and you're like, why are you still walking into the woods? Why are you still... They know it as well, and they still walk into it. And it was kind of like that idea that sometimes in a relationship feels like that, where you're like, oh, I know this is going to end bad. Why am I watching myself still do it?
Yeah.
Kind of thing. So it's kind of where like the horror iconography came from. But yeah.
There's that classic line in horror movies where if they're trying to find something, they're like, hey, let's split up. We'll cover more ground that way. And it's like, oh, this is so obvious.
Like,
where it's
no.
going.
Yeah.
It's so silly. So this book, Vultures, utilizes the Southern Gothic mode, which is a form of literature that emphasizes the presence of rational, horrific, and transgressive thoughts, desires, and impulses, grotesque characters, dark humor, and an overall angst-ridden sense of alienation. Did you choose this style because of its history as a means to reject cultural mythology that obfuscates reality, and how that most likely lines up with your upbringing in the church and your emerging queerness, and how those two forms contrast and clash? Where are we at with that?
I love that question. It's a great question. I think yes, for sure. I mean, the short answer is yes. I think that is a big part of it. It was also, I was listening to a lot of Ethel Cain at the time. During the summer that I was writing it, I was reading a lot of poetry that was that kind of style, and I just really, I don't know, it kind of just started emerging in my writing kind of naturally. I didn't really set out to write it in that style, and it's just the kind of writing that I was really drawn to at the time, and I feel a real connection to. I think I was also doing a lot of research and like thinking a lot about the South in America and the Bible Belt, and I have some family that comes from there, and I think it was kind of like exploring the similarities and the contrast between the South in America and the Bible Belt and that kind of small town church community vibes, and how I grew up in a small town in New Zealand, and how, well, a small town, like a small community, I guess, in that small church community, and how those things are sort of similar and also different. So it was kind of just, yeah, looking at the contrast between growing up in a small church community in New Zealand, in Aotearoa, in comparison with people's experience growing up in the South and in small town church communities there. And I think the Southern Gothic kind of vibe kind of just came naturally from that exploration.
Sick, sick. You mentioned before that you you wrote a lot of this book over one summer, and that's where a lot of the material on Vultures comes from. How did this... I think you said verbatim on an RNZ interview that you wrote every day for a summer. I'm wondering, how does that mode of production where you set yourself a goal of writing a certain amount each day, how does that change how your poems would normally come together, and how did it affect the material, the subject matter of the poems?
I think it definitely is very different to my normal style. I think my normal style is very much a lot more sporadic and a lot more inspiration based, and a lot less structured. But sitting down to write this book, I knew I had a deadline and I knew I had certain goals to meet, and I had a team behind me encouraging me to meet those goals. And that was really, really helpful for me, because I think otherwise I might never have completely finished the book. I'm kind of the kind of person that I would work on it forever if I didn't have someone sort of saying, okay, you need it in by this date. So that was really helpful for me, and just forcing myself to write even on the days that I didn't feel like writing. Some of your best work ends up coming from that, even if it's just a few sentences and you can't write much more that day. It's just, I guess it's just building a muscle, and it was really helpful for me to have those goals. Yeah, I think I just wrote a lot more, and so then I got better at my craft because I was practicing.
Mm-hmm. You say that you were the kind of person who would work on it forever. Is that because you're a perfectionist?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, this must have been a challenge then.
10 years before I liked it enough to put it out, but no, it's good having someone saying, okay, no, enough, you gotta put it out now.
yeah, totally. The book itself follows your trajectory over the years as you've grown into yourself, and some of the poems reference your younger self. When you were writing over that summer, did you look at any old memorabilia, such as old diaries, photos, family pictures, to better remember what life was like as a teen, or do you just have a really good memory and a really good sense of self?
Honestly, I should have done that. It's a great idea. I didn't much, really. A few of the poems in the book, and a lot of the poems that were going to be in the book, so like my original drafts, started a long time ago. So I think reading those was really helpful, because a lot of them were actually written when I was a teenager, and so I could pretty quickly come back into that part of myself and experience that self. And I think because I've been writing for such a long time, there are poems that I have still in my docs and still in my Word or whatever that I did write when I was 16, 17 years old. So that was a really quick way for me to sort of jump back into that part of myself and remember what it felt like to be a teenager when you go back to the world.
And that's really unique, eh? There's a poem on here, Rotting Bees, which I thought was quite funny in a lot of ways. Is it about soft boys? Because that's the general vibe I get.
yeah. Pretty much, yeah. The short answer is yes.
Nice. It's good to get some more soft boy hate out there. Have you seen the Instagram account Beat Me Up Soft Boy?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's one of my top favourites over the past few years. Eh?
It is really funny.
Super funny. Lastly, while I have you this morning, another favourite poem of mine here was My Dad Asks Me What Queer Joy Is. It's an excellent poem about relishing in your identity after much hardship, and it's one of the most moving pieces about emerging as a confident queer adult that I've ever heard. In the poem, you say you felt queer joy when you came out to your dad, and how he implicitly said it's okay by asking if you wanted some Brazil nuts, and then he told you the amount of magnesium they have. Big dad move. When was the first time you think you felt queer joy?
Well, thank you, first of all, for that compliment. That's really lovely. I'm glad you enjoyed it. The first time I think I felt queer joy, just off the top of my head, would be, I think, just being in community and being in queer spaces. I think one of the first times that I went to like a queer event or a queer night, club night, where I remember walking down the stairs and looking around and being like, whoa, okay, there's so many people that are like me. And I think growing up, especially within religion, you can feel like you're the only one who is queer, or it can be very isolating. And I think once you're in a room full of hundreds and, you know, eventually thousands of people that are all quail identify similarly to you, it's a really beautiful, joyous feeling, and can be really overwhelming and really beautiful. And for me, that was the first moment where I just realized that I wasn't alone in it. And I think that's why community is so important, especially for groups who have historically been marginalized. I think it's even more important to connect with community and find your community. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's probably the first. Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Did you have that moment during your late teenage years, or after you'd left home and university? When did that happen?
I was in my 20s.
Oh, really?
I didn't sort of like officially come out until I was like 24. So I spent a lot of time not in those spaces because I didn't feel like I could go to them. So it was really powerful the first times that I went, and I was like, wow, I'm not the only one.
Was it a friend who brought you along, or were you like, right, it's time to get this done, I'm gonna get stuck in? What was the vibe?
I went by myself. Can't I find. Brought my friend with me. I was like, come with me, it'll be crack up, like, ah. I was like, oh, it'll just be fun, like, it'll be good. And then I got there and I was like, wow. But no, she's a great friend. It was really a special moment for me. And yeah, now I love being in those community spaces, and I'm in them all the time. And I work in them, so I've come a long way in that way. But yeah, it is. I really definitely recommend people to find their community. I think that's one of the best places you can start.
For sure. Build their own family. Find their home. Big important part of becoming an adult, really, but also about finding your identity. It's a big step. Ka pai. Ka pai on you for doing that.
Thank you.
people can find this book at deadbirdbooks.com for $35. Anything else you'd like to say this morning, Jenny? Any well wishes for the folks out there listening?
Kind of already said it. Just find your community. Don't be ashamed to be yourself. And there's more people like you out there than you think. And being queer is beautiful. And a little plug, we are having a launch on the 25th of July at Whammy. That's in Tamaki Makaurau. So if you have any listeners from there, or who'll be up here at the time, yeah, that's a book launch, and there'll be performances and musicians, and it'll be a really fun night. And yeah, you can follow me on my Instagram and TikTok, Dawn Poems, DAWN Poems, to see more writing. But yeah.
Excellent.
Thank
stuff.
You so much.
Thank you very much, Jenny. Have a great day, and I wish you all the success
Thank
with the new book.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you very much. Take care. Alrighty, that was Jenny, a.k.a. Jennifer Rockwell, a Aotearoa poet, and we're talking about her new book, Vultures, which you can find at deadbirdbooks.com for $35. It's a great read, highly recommend. I really, really, really got stuck into it yesterday while I was researching for this corridor. So, yeah, highly recommend you check that out. We have a request from old mate Jenny. We're going to be playing Molly Payton's Asphalt, and then we're going to be playing some Aldous Harding. We have a corridor with Voice of Lalea on their debut single, Island Proud, at 10:30. So stick around for that. Let's get stuck into some tunes. I've had enough yapping. I'm sure you have too. Here is Molly Payton, Asphalt. This is the Radio 1 Late Breakfast Program, 10:14. Ka kite, see you soon.
This was a Radio 1 91 FM podcast. All of our content lives online at r1.co.nz.